All righty, welcome to the show, the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman. I'm Bill Clement. We're coming to you live from the NHL store powered by Reebok in the heart of Manhattan. NHL Home Ice, XM204, as well as NHL.com. Let me give you the phone numbers. The commish is anxious to get to as many calls as he can today. Not that it's any different than any other week, but this is playoff kickoff week.
I'm completely disoriented. It's Tuesday afternoon. My biorhythms are a mess.
That's why you were 3 minutes early today.
I'm completely out of sync. It's not my typical Tuesday, but this isn't the typical week, as you point out. The playoffs starting tomorrow night is obviously first and foremost in our minds, and we've come off an incredible weekend finishing up the regular season.
I
mean, who would have thought that Carolina would have lost to the Panthers on Friday night when that would have sealed it for them, and then Washington completing an amazing end to the regular season beats the same Florida team and moves up to third.
Yeah. In the category of competitive balance, five teams are in this year that missed last year.
That's an interesting statistic.
One in the West and yes. Four in the East. I was just trying to think of who the heck they were. Colorado is in. Vancouver is out in the West. The Flyers, Washington Caps, Boston, and Montreal all missed last year. The Islanders, Buffalo, Tampa Bay, and Atlanta get to watch this year.
And think of how many teams were within four or five points of making it. And you know, I have this ritual that I do, perhaps a bit masochistic on my part. When the regular season's over, I call all the teams that qualify for the playoffs and wish them good luck. But I also call the teams that have been eliminated. And, you know, some of the conversation is the schedule, which at one point in the season got a little bit of criticism, turned out to be absolutely spectacular down the stretch in terms of how much every game meant and how the standings were changing every night. What it proved was two things. One, the competitive balance is great and it made for an exciting finish to the season, but it also proved that every single game in this regular season mattered for a lot of clubs. There are teams that for two or four points might have been in the playoffs, and that's a couple of losses in October and November.
Yep.
So I think that bodes very well for the future. I think last week I told the story about the owner who called me and said, I went to bed in third place and woke up out of the playoffs and we didn't even play. You know, that's how
shouldn't intense, have gone to bed.
Well, it wouldn't have made any difference. He still would have woken up or he still would have been out of the playoffs because that's how tight all of the races were. And I think, you know, and the commentators, the television side commentators I know did a conference call yesterday, this is a real pick 'em. I mean, yeah. Virtually any team that's now qualified for the playoffs has a shot to go all the way. And I think the word upset is likely to be overused because no matter who wins any series, yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be fair to call it an upset.
Agreed. I want to ask you a question about the schedule. Before that, the phone number to talk to us today, 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. About the regular schedule and some of the owners talking, a little bit of pushback. Was there pushback when they looked at the last 2 weeks of the season and saw only teams within their own divisions?
No, they like that.
That's what they liked.
Oh, I think that's what made it spectacular. The schedule maker, Steve Hatzepetros, rarely gets a lot of credit, rarely hears the words, wow, you did a really good job. But at least at this point in the season, the last 2-3 weeks, people thought that it was absolutely phenomenal.
Steve obviously is as busy for a more condensed segment of the year, the couple of weeks leading up to the playoffs, than he is most of the summer when he's trying to do 82-game schedules for everybody. One of the tasks is having games on every night, right? Is that driven by all of the TV, including Versus, that wants to have games every night? Because that's you can't have any dark nights, right, in the first couple of weeks of the playoffs.
Well, you try not to because you have a potential of 56 games in the first round of the playoffs, and you've got to schedule them into a 2-week window. There are issues relative to building availability. As much as we ask our clubs not to book other events, they do.
They have to, though.
Well, of course they do.
Yeah.
I know that. But we try to make sure they don't do it too many successive nights in a row so we're not blocked out of a building for 3 or 4 days straight. And so that's something that they do. The we have lots of broadcast partners on a national basis, versus NBC, CBC, TSN, RDS, and we try to maximize the exposure, not because we're kowtowing to the networks, because the fans want to have as many playoff games as possible accessible.
Which series featured the greatest issues with building availability? Was there one that stood out where you went, wait a second, we got a real issue here?
Well, we had a potential issue which never materialized. In Colorado, the Pepsi Center is hosting the Frozen Four, the Collegiate NCAA Championship. So we knew that that building wasn't going to be available for the first 3 or 4 or 5 days of the first round. While I wouldn't call it good news from Colorado's standpoint, the fact that they didn't have home ice for the first round made it easy for us to deal with this issue, and it wasn't the factor. And it's good for hockey that they're playing the Frozen Four in an NHL arena. So this one worked out well for everybody.
Looking forward to getting started with our NHL Hour. Commissioner Gary Bettman, I'm Bill Clement. We're live from our NHL store powered by Reebok in New York. Phone number again, 877-645-6696. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. So on the final analysis, everybody happy? All teams that made it? Or is that an impossibility?
No, it's an impossibility because some teams have back-to-backs. I think there are probably 4 or 5 series that have a potential back-to-back.
What's the problem with? I don't get the problem with that, though. They have those during the season all the time, and if it's the same for both teams, I don't quite get that.
Well, I don't either, but it doesn't stop clubs from complaining. And not all of them complained, and I'm not trying to characterize it that way, but, you know, teams always, well, why are we waiting till then to start, or why are we starting so quickly? If there's going to be a back-to-back, we try to do it so there's no travel involved, but you can't always do that as well. The schedule is extremely complicated, and, you know, Steve Hatzepetro spends the weekend dealing with the possibilities, and when we don't know until the last games are played who has home ice, how the seedings are going to be, we find ourselves in a situation where on Sunday night we're scrambling. This year we got the schedule out and announced somewhere between 9 and 10 o'clock. There are some years with a late West Coast game that we're not in a position to issue until midnight or later, and people say, well, what are you doing? Well, it isn't always that easy.
Yeah. Your schedule is not that easy either, is it? I mean, some days you come into the studio and you say, gosh, I don't even know where I was 2 hours ago, let alone 2 days ago. The Gary Bettman tour is about to begin here, is it not?
Yes. I will try and probably in the first 4 or 5 days of the playoffs, I think I'll hit probably 4 different cities. And so
both conferences?
Yeah. Although, being efficient in scheduling, I may try and do a Western swing and pick up 3 or 4 Western cities on one trip, so I'm not backtracking.
How do you travel?
What do you mean, how do I travel?
I mean, do you just head to an airport? Do you use a private jet? Or
I get on an airplane and I go.
Okay. And do you remember where you were the night before? Do you sit with owners all the time, or are some of them too wound up to be involved in conversation at that point?
During the regular season, I won't hesitate to sit with owners. In the playoffs, I tend to sit more by myself. I think it's probably more enjoyable for the owner not feeling that he has to restrain himself in terms of his enthusiasm. Not that he ever has to. I'm a nice guest. I sit there quietly. I don't root for either side. Typically, I generally leave the owners alone. I mean, I visit them during the game, but I don't generally sit with them during the playoffs, although occasionally I do. It depends.
Is there a commonality to the buzz that you feel in buildings from one building to the next? And for that matter, is it a different kind of buzz that you hear and feel relative to the regular season?
That's a pretty good question. Some buildings have an incredible buzz all year round. But I think all buildings buzz during the playoffs. It is the second season. It is something special. A series tends to build in its intensity, the familiarity, the animosity, the adjustments that are made, all are part of the experience.
Speaking of animosity, 5 of the 8 series feature teams that play within the same division. I would think that would lend to something that's a positive commodity this time of year, which is animosity early, because these teams see one another eight times a year. What do you make of that, and is that something that you're happy with, that five divisional rivals will meet, or at least five series feature divisional rivals?
Well, they say that the playoffs tend to create or intensify rivalries, so I think the series that you're talking about are all going to be, you know, things that next season, you know, will build off of no matter what happens in these series.
I'm just guessing that Rangers devs don't need much to build off of. It's going to be unbelievable.
Well, but this will be another stone in their storied history of incredible series.
All right, I guess we're going to go to some calls. That's the idea. We're staring at a blank board here, and we thought, you know what, the love is gone, but Greg Baldinger has just wheeled up his iPhone here.
Well, you know, it's fascinating to me. Is the board down with a technical problem?
No, everything's fine. I
got to
get a mic.
You'll take a mic.
I'll take mine.
Yeah, I'm going to take yours. Well, okay. Everything's fine. The calls are going through Toronto.
Okay.
Somebody didn't turn the switch, I presume, but it's all callers will get through, and you'll be able to talk to Gary and Bill.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Didn't this happen when Bill Daly hosted the show once and there were no calls takeable?
Correct.
You see, it's all part. I'm telling you, we're out of sync because it's Tuesday. Okay, whose idea was it to go on Tuesday instead of Thursday?
It was yours.
No, it was not mine.
Well, we wouldn't have had the show had it been Thursday.
No, I didn't object. I didn't veto.
I want Bill's mic again. Whose idea was it? I think, collective idea. How about that?
Well, no, it wasn't collective.
So no more Tuesdays. How about that? No more Tuesdays for the NHL Hour. Period.
Well, I think that's fine. On that note, let's talk to Edward in Nova Scotia. Edward, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
How you doing today, guys?
We're doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing all right, sir. Thank you very much. First, I just want to say, since Commissioner, I have to applaud you, just because I don't know too many other major sports commissioners that have their own radio show. So I certainly appreciate the chance to talk with you.
Well, thank you, although some may question my sanity. But I'm happy to do it.
Well, it's an exciting time for sure. But anyway, my question deals with the officiating and the playoffs. Like, I read an article in the Ottawa Sun about a couple of weeks ago insinuating basically that Bill McCreary wasn't the greatest official that officiated the Ottawa Senators games. I found that pretty interesting, considering the fact that I didn't hear any response from the league, or even Stephen Watson, for that matter. I'm just wondering what your take is on that, and if that has any bearing on if number one, he is going to officiate in the postseason, and if he's going to be doing any of the Pittsburgh Ottawa games. I'll lower my radio and listen.
Okay, well, first of all, we don't put any credence, no offense to any of the media listening, on the media critiquing of our officials. The fact is we have a very competent and extensive staff who are evaluating, critiquing, and monitoring our officials on a daily basis. And frankly, you know, just because the media in some city may perceive that they don't like the performance of a particular official, that has no influence on what we do. I rely on Coley Campbell and Stephen Walkham and their staffs to determine the assignments for the officials and who's going to work the playoffs. And the good news about the playoffs is while we have confidence in all our officials, the best 16 referees are the ones who are selected to work the playoffs, and we will be winnowing down the officials to a smaller and smaller list as we work our way through the playoffs.
I'd love to see where that came from. Just out of curiosity.
Well, he said it came from Ottawa.
I know, but a little more specifically than that.
Are you suggesting it was planted by the team?
Oh, it could have been.
No, I don't. Teams would never play that kind of gamesmanship. Kevin in Montreal, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
Hi, how are you guys? First off,
How are you?
Very good. I just wanted to say to Bill Clement, first of all, love what you do over at Hockey Buzz. I think it's a great outside the mainstream media website to visit. And
thank you.
On another
Appreciate
note,
that.
My question for Gary is, basically, with the recent resurgence of the Montreal Canadiens finishing atop the Eastern Conference, how important is it to the NHL for teams like Montreal and original six teams to be competitive every year and to be involved in the playoff picture and does it bode well economically for the NHL?
You know, that's a question I get asked a lot, and it's a fair question. And I'll give you my standard answer, which some people will view as a bit of a cop-out, but I mean it, and then I'll try and get a little more specific. We at the league office don't root. We want to make sure that the games are fairly decided, that the officiating's good, that there are no incidents. But what we also hope for is exciting competitiveness throughout the league, much like we saw this year. There are teams that some years are going to be very good and some years are going to be very bad, and all teams go through cycles. It's the rare team that can stay on top consistently. Detroit, probably in the hockey example, is a notable exception because they have been consistently strong for the last decade plus. But what we don't like to see is a team, you know, be out of the picture and non-competitive for too long, taking too long to come out of the cycle. Not because it's good or bad for the league, but because we know that the fans of that team are being impacted, that they're suffering with the team. So you never want to see a team be out of it for too long. It is nice to see when a team resurges and gets really good. Again, not from a league perspective, because over time you assume it all balances out. And so, you know, we don't have a rooting interest. If a team in a big market hasn't been good for a long period of time and gets better, of course that's good. But the same's true of a team in a small market. You know, traditional or non-traditional market, too long of being not competitive isn't good for that franchise. And you want to have as few weak franchises in the league as possible.
It can't be bad to have Montreal in the playoffs. That's for sure. I don't know which Canadian team actually pulls the best ratings on television in the U.S. It's got to be Montreal or Toronto.
Montreal and Toronto clearly in the U.S. Toronto followed by Montreal in Canada.
Sure.
And that's no surprise to anybody. But part of that is, you know, it's interesting because people talk about non-traditional markets in the United States, markets that have been in the league, you know, 10 or 12 years. But relative to Canada, every market except Montreal and Toronto, not that they're non-traditional because hockey's a religion in Canada, but they haven't had their fan bases grow as long as Toronto and Montreal. So it's not surprising that when you're in Edmonton or Calgary or Vancouver, you'll see lots of fans for Toronto and Montreal when they come in.
I was an original Calgary Flame. Our first game against Montreal, standing ovation when Montreal took the ice. We all went, what's up?
Well, that's our home game. But that's my point.
Exactly.
Okay,
I get it.
Now, the Flames have been in Calgary since the early 80s.
Yep.
And so there's a rich history and tradition. They've had their Stanley Cup. But the fact of the matter is there are still people, particularly your age and my age, Bill, whose rooting interests go back to perhaps before the time they relocated.
The loyalists.
You know, and not unlike in football where Dallas was perceived to be as America's team, you know, my guess is there's a little bit of the notion that Toronto or maybe even Montreal are Canada's teams.
Yeah.
Jim in Pennsylvania, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Mr. Commissioner, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a quick question for you. Just want to explain myself real fast. I'm a longtime Devils fan. Originally out of the New Jersey area, I now live in eastern Pennsylvania. My question for you is: I had to subscribe to the center ice package to be able to watch the Devils on a market team. But my question for you is: when they play the Rangers, which a team that plays further away than the Devils, my games are blacked out.
And where do you live in New Jersey?
Excuse me.
Where do you live in New Jersey? Oh, you're in eastern Pennsylvania. That the Devils and Rangers territories, while quite similar, aren't identical. I'm not exactly sure why that's the case, but we're going to take a look into that to see if we can figure it out. You would think from a center ice perspective, the Rangers and the Devils blackouts would be roughly the same. Perhaps you're in one of those border areas relative to their broadcast area that would make a difference. But in the course of the broadcast, we're going to take a check and see if we can find the answer to that question out. Thank you for calling. Gordy in Arkansas. From Arkansas. Great. XM 204, you're on with Bill and Gary.
Hey, Gary. glad to see a commissioner of all the pro sports. You're the only one I know of that does a radio show, and I really appreciate you do what you're doing. I'm a
well, thank you.
Red Wing fan transplanted down here in Little Rock, and I've had the NHL Center Ice package since day one, and I've got the high-def package with DirecTV. And I've got really two questions. One's a high-def question. One's an actual hockey question. Is there a reason why I cannot get the Hockey Night in Canada's CBC games in high-def? They're always just the regular, you know, analog kind of channels.
Let me answer that first. Probably because DirecTV yet doesn't have enough capacity to do all of the center ice games in high definition. That is changing over time. They're launching new satellites, and when they have more capacity, they will take more of the feeds. My guess is they're probably taking a U.S. game that's in high def and using that for their high def capacity on Saturday nights. Your second question?
Yeah, this is a hockey. About a month ago, and I've been trying to get through to you, I would have called sooner. The Red Wings lost a close game to San Jose due to the fact a puck bounced off the netting, the mesh behind the goal. The Wings all saw it, but the San Jose didn't score the goal. And the Ken Daniels, the announcer, mentioned that was an unreviewable play. Is there talk about making that a reviewable play when the puck bounces off the net and it's supposed to stop the play?
By the way, I remember that play as well. Our replay, which has been the pioneer in professional sports replay, is generally perceived to be the best. And when I say best, the least amount of controversy, but it doesn't mean it's not completely controversy-free. But one of the reasons it does work as well as it does is it's limited to the scoring of a goal. So, for example, if there's an offside that leads to a goal, we don't review the offsides. If there was a penalty that should have been called but it isn't, then there's a goal, we don't review that. And so when the puck went off the netting, and you're talking about the netting behind the net above the glass to keep the puck from going into the crowd, that's just the judgment call from the referees. And the fact that it subsequently led to a goal, it isn't reviewable. And if we started reviewing every play, we'd be stopping the game incessantly, and the games would run 4 and 5 hours, and it would disrupt the flow. There's a human element to this game. Players sometimes make mistakes, coaches make mistakes, and so do the referees, although we try to minimize the number of mistakes that the referees make.
Devin Setoguchi didn't make a mistake on the play. He's the guy that scored, and I still vote for letting play continue the puck goes off the netting.
Before we break, and I'll let you take us to the break in a second, one of the earlier callers asked me about Billy McCreary, and I neglected to confirm the fact that he will, in fact, be working the first round of the playoffs.
Well, he's the dean, or at least one of the deans, so he should be. The eve of the playoffs, never a better time. In spite of the fact that we're on Tuesday instead of Thursday, things seem to have a way of working out. We're going to step out, come back. Commissioner Gary Bettman will answer your questions by phone and email. This is the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com. From the Minnesota All-Star Game.
Well, for those who don't know what you're talking about, that's Bare Naked Ladies, who entertained at All-Star in Minnesota outdoors in the ice castle in a snowstorm. And at least we're getting the music right on Tuesday as we wait for the next thing to go wrong.
Something's going to go right tomorrow, isn't it? The launch of the NHL Network online.
Yes,
which
the broadband network.
Yeah.
Seven NHL channels. The video will be incredible, and I urge people to tune in the hockey show. You'll have a broadband experience, we believe, second to none. And for the hockey fan, it will just be something beyond which you've been able to experience, and we're excited about it.
And The Hockey Show, which is what it's called, was conceived, and it will be produced exclusively for the web. So this isn't like you're just going to
recycle stuff.
Regurge stuff, right?
Yes. This is new gurge, not regurge.
Different, its own talent and everything. So I can't wait to take a look at it.
Good. Fantastic. Hopefully, technically, it will work.
It ain't Tuesday tomorrow. It's Wednesday, brother.
Hey, you know, we didn't discuss the lottery last night. Did you enjoy watching it on either TSN versus or NHL.com or the NHL Network?
You know, I had just finished. We did our two-hour preview show on Rogers Sportsnet in Canada. I was up there for that. I was at the airport getting ready to fly home. I sat down to have a cold beer while I was waiting for my plane. There it was. There was Bill Daly right in front of me. My timing was perfect. And I thought, wait a minute, they're just showing us the order that the teams actually finished in the NHL. But the order of the selection of the five was exactly the way they finished.
Well, it's a weighted lottery. And sometimes that's going to happen. And that's okay. Because the draft is intended to help those most needy. And Tampa Bay, who had the worst record and had the best chance of winning the lottery, actually won it. And L.A. has the second pick. This is going to be a good draft, and hope springs eternal this time of year for the teams that haven't made the playoffs.
Yeah, no doubt. Our phone number again, 877-645-6696. Callers are standing by, I believe.
Ken in South Dakota, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're good. How
you
are
bet.
You?
Okay, I'm doing pretty good. I just had a question. Like, I've been a hockey fan since I could walk. And, you know, you finally got the league set up with the parity thing, which is really good. Everybody's got to push into the playoffs, which is great. But then all of a sudden, everybody wants to see more scoring. Like, if a playoff game is like a 1-1 tie or a 0-0 or a 2-2, does that make it any less interesting than something that goes 15-10? You know,
I don't think. By the way, I think
it's a good defensive game. Yes.
Yeah, but there can be great defensive games. There can be great goaltended games. There can be great games with lots of scoring and no scoring. The fact of the matter is, what we tend to focus on is scoring chances, the flow and speed and skill of the game, and the lead changes. Is the game exciting? Does it get out of reach with a period to go with a team up by one goal? I think there are more critics of the game, you know, who are taking shots at it that complain about the scoring than people actually feel. I think most people feel the way you do. You want to see an entertaining, exciting game whose outcome is in doubt till the last minute. And I think for the most part, our games have had that. Has goal scoring declined in the last couple of years since we came back from the work stoppage? Yes. But frankly, that seems to be more a function of fewer power plays and fewer power play goals. There isn't that much of a disparity in equal strength goals from what we had 2 years ago, but we were averaging, I want to say, 13 penalties a game when we first came back from the work stoppage, and players and coaches were adjusting to the standard. Last year, I think we were averaging about 11 penalties a game, and now we're doing about 9, 9.5. And so there are fewer penalties being called, not because we're abandoning the standard, but because the players have done such a good job of adjusting to the standard. I think we had 550-ish one-goal decisions and about another 110 or so two-goal decisions, and those had a number of them empty net goals. So we have close games, and to me that's more important than having a game decided 10-2.
I've always tried to counsel people, do not confuse goal scoring with an entertainment value. End-to-end action is where the true entertainment is in a 2-1 hockey game. I like goals, but there would be nothing worse than watching a 7-5 game with 9 power play goals. Power plays are generally static offense against a zone defense, and to me that's not as entertaining. So don't ever confuse entertainment value just with sheer numbers of goals.
And I also think that you can't stereotype or characterize any particular game as I like this type of game. It really depends, as you say, where the game's being played. Is it all in the neutral zone? Are they digging in the corners and putting pressure on the goaltenders? That's what it's all about.
Right.
And on that note, Why don't we go to Tim in St. James, New York? Tim, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. You do such a phenomenal job with the commercials, the Ovechkin commercials, the commercials with the other guys in the hotel, and even the new ones now with the coach and the junior guys. I was just curious. You only see them in the NHL Network. I have the Center Ice package at home during hockey games, but you never see them on mainstream TV. Will there ever come a time? I'm assuming that it's a cost issue to have it on while American Idol's on. But I know one of our concerns is growing the game and getting a bigger fan base, obviously. I was just wondering if we would ever see that down the road.
Well, actually, coming back from the work stoppage, we bought advertising in other programming and various media. But I think if you look throughout what all the major league sports do, most of us are running our commercials and our advertisements and our charitable pieces during our own games and our own types of programming. It's the rare sport that's buying media outside of its games. And what's interesting is, you know, while American Idol, for an example, is popular, I'm not so sure that that's the best place to go find sports fans who might be interested in following hockey. And so unless you're like one of the major package goods companies who has tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on advertising, you try and go where you can find sports fans. And so NBC will advertise us during other sports as a promotion to broadcast coming up, versus TSN, CBC will all promote us the same way. But most sports leagues aren't spending money to advertise outside of the sports programming that they actually put on. But that is an excellent question.
By the way, tomorrow night, the great kickoff. Versus is going to be wall-to-wall starting tomorrow night. They kick it off at 6:30 Eastern with a preview show. Then at 7 o'clock, they'll have the Sens and the Pens. CBC also will carry that game. Then at 10 Eastern on Versus, as well as CBC, it's the Flames and the Sharks. TSN also tomorrow night at 7 Eastern will have the Rangers and the New Jersey Devils, followed by, I'm assuming they'll join this in progress since it's listed as a 9 p.m. start, the Avs, the Colorado Avs, and the Minnesota Wild. So it's that time of year, the best time of year. Cherry blossoms are blooming and hockey is being played.
No pun intended, but it should be a wild night.
all around, not necessarily just in that Colorado-Minnesota series. We'll step out when we come back. Commissioner Gary Bettman of the NHL will continue to answer your questions here on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com. Song you sing to your wife when the playoffs begin?
If I see her, Rambling Man by the Allman Brothers? Yeah, I guess so. I don't think if I tried that joke at home, it would wear particularly well.
She's got to be used to it by now.
She is used to it. So that's why, you know, we have an understanding.
When I'm not here, I'm gone. When I'm here, I'm really here. We're here. It's Tuesday. Before the show ends, we'll let you know what's going on with the show next week. And we'll have time to make it up between now and then.
Well, we're not doing it on Tuesday, I can tell you that. We're going back to Thursdays. The karma on Tuesdays is rough.
Okay, so
the technical stuff doesn't work. Okay. It's just you and me. And we won't say who we were trying to get for an interview. That bailed out. Nothing worked today. But we are getting great questions from our callers, and that's what it's all about, and that's why we do this show. And on that note, Stuart in Ontario, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204.
How are you, guys? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk
Thanks.
To you.
Great. Appreciate you. Gary, first of all, appreciate you taking time to do this for the fans. This has really become a big Gary Bettman fan since you started, gotten to know you a lot better. And really
weren't you before? Weren't you before?
Oh, well, of course, but even more so now.
Yeah,
well,
of course. You know, yeah. Bill, you shouldn't put our listeners on the spot like
that. Oh, yeah,
that.
I should. That's sure, okay. I should.
It's okay.
Well, I had a question for you about the weighted lottery system. Just to start
sure.
off, I'm a fan of both Toronto and Los Angeles, so involved in two fronts there on the lottery system last night. And it seems to me that the current system, you know, rewards the teams that finish the lowest in the standings because, yeah, as you mentioned before, they have the greatest need. But as a fan, it creates kind of an awkward situation as the season goes on. For example, both the Kings and the Leafs looked like they were well out of the race early in the year. So when you're watching the games as a fan, you're almost cheering for them to lose, which is a really bizarre emotion because you should never cheer for your team to lose. Although the players will always be trying to win as a fan, it's a bit odd. So just wanted to get your comments on that and wondered if it was something that was being looked at on an annual or biannual basis as far as how the lottery system is structured and whether it should be weighted at all or just evenly distributed between the 14 non-playoff teams.
You know, it's a fair question, and it's something that we're not currently looking at, but periodically we do consider it. As you correctly pointed out, the purpose of the draft is to help those that are the most needy and get them the most help. I think we would all agree that a team that just misses the playoffs by a point or two is in less need of help than a team that finishes 25 points out of the playoffs. And so if you had a system where the team who didn't make the playoffs, which didn't make the playoffs, by a point or two gets the first pick in the draft, I think people would find that system to be unsatisfactory. By the same token, we didn't want a system where teams were incentivized to lose, particularly down the stretch. And so we believe that anybody who can make the playoffs is going to try and make the playoffs. And for the other teams, as the season winds down and they can't make the playoffs, we don't want them thinking, well, maybe we're better off losing to get a better pick. Maybe we're better off losing to get the number one pick. And so with the odds, the chances of you improving your position by losing really aren't enhanced. By the way, I think that's more a perceptual problem because I don't believe our coaches and our players are constitutionally capable of intentionally losing games. I think it's more in terms of what the perception is that's going on out there. And we adopted the weighted lottery as a method of saying there's really no incentive to losing here. By losing an extra game or two, you're really not improving your chances.
Well, Tampa had a 25% chance
right,
of getting the first pick.
Exactly right.
L.A. had an 18.8% chance, Atlanta 14. So those aren't great odds. So, you know, why bother?
Why bother? And you can't move up more than four spots so that even if the team that was 14th best of the teams that didn't make the playoffs, or the first best, you know what I'm saying here, they can move up by winning the lottery, but only four spots because, again, the purpose of the draft is to help those that need the most help.
You have to be careful. Scenario, team is all banged up, injuries most of the season. It really impacts where they finish. Do they deserve a better chance at a number one overall pick just based on the fact that they had a lot of guys on the IR that year?
You know, no. It depends on how bad the season is. But if you've had that bad a season, you get rewarded with some help. But that's the point where the draft is the annual rite of renewal. And teams that didn't perform as well as they would have liked, teams that have needs, have a chance to fill them. And that's the purpose of having the draft. Let's talk to Rob on Long Island. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
How you doing, guys? This is going to sound like a pretty strange question, but it's something that I've noticed more and more over the last two seasons. You know, obviously it's a penalty for charging if an oncoming player leaves his skates or leaves the ice, jumps off the ice to make contact in the corner. But the one thing I'm not seeing, and I'm not hearing really anybody discuss, is the amount of people that, when they see the hit coming, are leaving their skates, then in essence pushing their elbows and their shoulder pads higher into the head region of the person who's throwing the check. And I honestly believe that more guys are leaving their skates as they get closer to the boards in reaction to the player that's about to be hit, leaving their feet.
See anybody get hurt that way?
Well, I haven't seen any permanent injury, but I can't lie. I don't get to watch as many games as I would like. But you do see a lot more guys getting elbow pads in the face coming in for hits staying on the ice because guys are leaving ice skates in reaction to the hit that's coming.
Well, I think there are two things there. One, if a guy is defending himself or bracing for a hit, I don't think you want to be penalizing that. On the other hand, if you see somebody coming in and you intentionally put up your elbow or the butt end of your stick to make contact in a way where you're going to hurt the guy that's coming in to check you, you're going to get called for a penalty for that. And so it's really a question of what you're doing. We certainly don't encourage players to put themselves in harm's way, to turn their backs at the last second, so they wind up getting bored. And most players don't do that. But you also have to remember, this game is happening so quickly that a lot of what you're seeing in slow-mo is taking place in about a half a second. And so it's easy to dissect these plays after the fact. Frequently, a player will brace himself for a hit, put his arms up, put his stick up, you know, across his chest to brace himself.
It's quite natural, by the way, to want to do that.
I would. But if you're doing it in a way that it's intended to inflict injury right. on the guy checking you, you will get called for a penalty.
As you should.
As you should.
Our phone number here on the NHL Hour is 877-645-6696, 645-6696, our special Tuesday edition, getting ready to kick off the playoffs tomorrow night in fine fashion on all networks or go. By the way, NBC is getting set to go on Saturday and Sunday. NBC will have Game 2 of Nashville and Detroit at 2 p.m. on Saturday, and TSN will also carry that game. Then Sunday, the Flyers and the Washington Caps. Everybody will get to see Alexander Ovechkin on NBC. That Game 2 of their series will also be played at 2 p.m.
Let's talk to Jeremy in Cleveland. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
How we doing, gentlemen? It's such an honor to talk to you. My question is being in an area that's surrounded by several teams, being in Cleveland, we have Detroit around us, we have Columbus around us, and we also have Pittsburgh. We also have influence now because we got an AHL franchise that's now being supported by the Colorado Avalanche. One thing that really disappointed me last year is I'm a 20-year fan of the Detroit Red Wings. And in the first round of the playoffs, one of the games that was scheduled to be on NBC was put out due to a early season baseball game. And my question is what type of marketing or what type of options are you looking at for, like, areas that could be a hotbed? Because I know we had several players come from this area, Danny Fritchie, for example, or Michael Rupp, not only to entice people to look at the games, but also to help with the upbringing of youth going into the games and making it even more of a hotbed for the NHL.
We like our games to be available in as many places as possible, particularly hotbeds like Cleveland. I think the situation that you're describing probably was a function of the fact that the baseball team, the Cleveland Indians, probably has a contract with the NBC affiliate in Cleveland to carry their games. That happens frequently. The Yankees preempt in New York primetime programming on, I forget which network they're on in New York or which network affiliate, and so there was probably a pre-existing contractual obligation. I'm surprised that it wasn't on a different over-the-air station frequently if the NBC affiliate, and this applies for all sports and the affiliates of their networks, if there's a local affiliate that has a contractual commitment to do something else. You sometimes find it with telethons. In addition to sports, they generally look for an alternate outlet on an independent over-the-air station. So my guess is the situation you're referring to was the function of a contractual commitment that the Cleveland NBC affiliate had to the baseball team, not a lack of interest in carrying the game of the week that NBC was carrying. Mike, in Florida, you're up next with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204. Hello, Mike.
Hello, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. My team's in. One of my teams is out. I'm a Tampa Bay fan and a Montreal Canadiens fan, so we got the high and the low end of the spectrum.
Well, but you won the lottery last night, so you're doing pretty well this week.
There you go.
Yeah. My question for Gary is, is the league intentionally doing anything to
try and promote the game in the rest of the country in non-traditional markets to raise awareness. Just as an example, to see anything hockey-related on CNN headline news is a rarity unless something major happens.
Well, we obviously encourage all of the broadcast and cable outlets to be carrying highlights and clips of our games. CNN doesn't particularly focus on sports. It focuses on news, and it gives a lighter touch to sports. To the extent that you're a fan and you want more information about what's going on, there are lots of alternative ways to get it. There's the NHL Network. There's NHL.com. Most of the sports websites cover us extensively. And if you go to NHL.com, particularly starting tomorrow, you'll have the treat of the 7 broadband channels that we will have for you to see. And it's something that Bill and I talked about earlier in the show. So there are plenty of ways to do it. Non-traditional markets, when a team gets eliminated, it's not unusual, not just in our sport, and not just the non-traditional markets in our sport. When a team's eliminated and there are other teams playing, the attention tends to go to what other sports are actually being played. So if you're in Tampa, my guess is the Devil Rays, although I don't think they're called that anymore, I think they're called the Rays, they're going to get more attention. That's just the fact of life because that's what's active in the market. Having said that, we have a program where we encourage the general managers, the coaches, and the players of teams that have been eliminated to stay active in the local media, to be talking about, almost commentate on the playoffs as they're going on. So if you follow the local media, both talk radio and print, you will hopefully see some of your favorite Tampa Bay Lightning players and executives talking about what else is going on in the playoffs.
I had people say to me this year, "Boy, I bet the NHL really wants Alex Ovechkin to make it into the playoffs." And I say to them, "Well, who is the NHL? If you're talking about Gary Bettman's office, his office is 30 teams. And I can guarantee you that Gary's not sitting there saying, I really want Alex in, when he's got the Carolina Hurricanes, the Atlanta Thrashers, the Florida Panthers, et cetera, on the phone."
Well, you know, what's fascinating to me is, and I hear it and I read it more frequently than I'd like, although it makes me chuckle. You know, the league office must be thrilled with this, or
right,
the league office is rooting for that, or Bettman wants this, or Bettman. We want to have fun, exciting games. We want to have great competition, and the results will take care of themselves.
Sure.
And, you know, it varies from year to year, and that's the excitement of our game, and that's why we actually play the games. And on that note, we'll go to Don in Toronto. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Gary, how are you?
Don, how are you?
Thank you for what you've done to hockey. You really did save it. But I have a good idea about the playoffs.
Please, let's hear it.
Well, okay, I would have like a bronze, silver, and gold playoffs, with the gold winner winning the Stanley Cup. The teams that don't make it, divide them up and have to keep the interest going in the small markets and the gate for the, you know, for the owners that need that money coming in, have like a bronze cup and a silver cup, and keep the fan interest going, even just for a couple of rounds into the playoffs. It could be scheduled so it wouldn't compete with the gold playoffs, but just for the fan interest alone in the small markets, and for the gates for the owners that need the money.
You know, I've never heard that suggestion
before. Nor have I.
But let me, there's no, actually it's an interesting thing. So let me give you a seat of the pants gut reaction. First of all, the premise seems to be that it's only the small market clubs that don't make the playoffs, and that's not true. You know, you've got plenty of small market teams that are in the playoffs, and you know, if you look at the Stanley Cup final for the last 3 years, we had plenty of small market clubs represented. So that's not the good premise. The second is, by not making the playoffs any more inclusive than it is, when you look at the races we had this year, it made the regular season, every game of the 1,230 games of the regular season, meant something. It was important. It was a defining, you know, ultimately defining moments for certain teams this season. And if you add more teams to the playoffs, and by the way, this was a league that historically got criticized when the playoffs were too inclusive, 16 out of 21. Now it's 16 out of 30, so basically half the league doesn't make it. I think we've hit a very good balance in terms of having a meaningful regular season. And I don't think we should be changing that. Somebody once had suggested to me, a general manager in this league, who said we should make the regular season longer and the playoffs shorter, shorten the rounds and have fewer games. I happen to think we have a pretty good balance right now. And frankly, going back to my regular season point, we played to 93%, 93.6% of capacity. We averaged over 17,000 people a game in attendance for the first time in our history. We had over 21 million fans for the first time. This is 3 years in a row coming back from the work stoppage with record attendance. So the regular season is clearly motivating our fans. In the playoffs, we typically play to 99 to 100% of capacity. What this is a testament to is our great fans, to whom I and this league are grateful.
And there's nothing like the March to the Cup. And I it's an interesting concept, but I personally wouldn't want to see a bronze medal round out there while the Stanley Cup was being contested.
No, and actually, in the Stanley Cup is silver, not gold.
Exactly.
So that part doesn't work either. Okay. Adam in Michigan, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, it's an honor to talk to you.
Well, thank you for calling.
Yeah. I've been a huge Avalanche fan ever since I moved to the league from Quebec, and living in Michigan, it feels great to wear my jersey in my high school.
Good for you.
And here's my question. With the teams getting better and better in the league, the three-point games and the salary cap all coming into play, would you ever consider a different playoff format? For example, doing away with the division winners, getting a guaranteed top three playoff spot, and going on...
Well, there's been some discussion about that. What we think that giving the divisional winners the first three seeds is really a great reward for the regular season and another reason that the regular season is so important. And I don't think too many people have focused on wanting to change that. I've heard a little bit about, well, maybe in the second round, which is the only other place where it makes a difference, that priority of seeding shouldn't take place as well. But frankly, you know, I'm kind of excited and intrigued by what happened with Carolina and Washington. The playoff seedings were basically done except for the number three spot, and I think that made the Southeast Division race really intense and exciting and led with the culmination of this past weekend where, ironically, thanks to the schedule maker, both teams, Carolina and Washington, played the same team for the right to get into the playoffs.
Florida.
It was fascinating to me. It couldn't have been any better.
It ain't broke, is it? I mean, it's nice to have suggestions, and a lot of people want to reinvent a wheel, but when the spokes are in place, the tires are properly inflated. I mean, is there any tweaking to be done?
Well, there's always the need to look to see if tweaking is needed. You know, your example of the tires are inflated, but you got to make sure there isn't a slow leak. Okay, you've got to always make sure that you understand the trends that are going on in the game, which is something that we monitor constantly. This game is living, breathing, it's dynamic, and you've got to stay on top of it as it's evolving.
That is it for our Tuesday. We appreciate everybody calling in and love to have you as part of the show. We're going to be back next Thursday, God willing.
A week from Thursday.
A week from Thursday. Yes, not 2 days from now, a week from Thursday. Coming up next, in the slot, Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy. The Gremlins are out of here, and so are we. Thank you for being part of the NHL Hour.